This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb. And tonight's guest, Carl Perrin, Staff Director, Senate Juvenile Delinquency Committee. Tonight's subject, should we control the sale of guns? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Standing by in Los Angeles, California, is Mr. Carl Perrin, Staff Director of the U.S. Senate Juvenile Delinquency Committee. Mr. Perrin is an expert on the topic of guns and the role that they play in crime here in America. If you'd like to ask Mr. Perrin a question on tonight's topic, should we control the sale of guns, or make a comment about the use of firearms, give us a call here at our national night call number. We'd like to hear your comments. The number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number to call, area code 313-846-6601. The lines are now open. The operator is on duty, so we await your call. Area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Perrin, do you believe that the use of firearms is a right or a privilege?
Well, apparently, according to the decisions of the Supreme Court, it is considered a privilege and not a right. The Second Amendment to the Constitution guaranteed the right to bear arms, but it was contingent on the maintenance of to quote the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia. This has now been construed to be made up of the National Guard. This does not mean that any citizen can go abroad fully armed to the teeth, in spite of any criminal record, emotional disturbance, or any age limit. The states themselves have each enacted in varying degrees laws which control the possession, sale, and use of firearms. So I think in terms of the Supreme Court decisions and in terms of state Supreme Court decisions and in terms of state laws, we can safely say that it's a privilege to be granted to those that have exhibited the proper control over their behavior to own, possess, and use firearms.
Do you think that most Americans feel that owning a firearm, irregardless of the Second Amendment, is really up to them, that the government shouldn't have anything to say about this?
Well, I think this has been the result of a great deal of propaganda put out by various gun lobbies, gun-owning groups, and so forth. As I've said, we can only refer or revert to the decisions of the Supreme Court and the state courts, which, according to the Attorney General of the United States in testimony before this subcommittee, refutes that contention. And this is the only basis that we can operate from.
Most American sportsmen feel very strongly about the Second Amendment, and it seems to me that they would resist, you know, any changes in this amendment. Now, how many Americans could be considered sportsmen?
If I may interrupt, most of the gun lobbies refer to the first section of the Second Amendment, or the first half of the sentence, which is that refers to the right of every citizen to maintain or bear arms. They completely eliminate in any of their pronouncements the second half of the sentence, which refers to the maintenance of a well-regulated militia. And you must remember, this document was written at a period in time, historically, when the defense of the community was dependent upon the citizen soldier. These conditions no longer exist. The Secretary of the Army has testified before this committee that there is no contingency in the Defense Department plans for any future warfare depending on the so-called armed citizen or citizen soldier.
In the United States Senate, Senator Thomas J. Dodd, I believe, seems to be the fellow who is the leading spokesman for control of firearms. Is this correct?
Well, I think throughout the year there have been many. Certainly Senator Dodd has been the leading advocate advocate of proper controls over the sale of weapons to criminals, drug addicts, mental incompetents, and juveniles.
Is there any truth to the charge that he's trying to disarm the American people?
No, in none of the legislation introduced by Senator Dodd has there been any attempt to disarm any law-abiding citizen in terms of his right to own, possess, or use a firearm. All the senator has been trying to do is allow the states to enforce their own laws. The bills he's introduced are interstate bills. We've found that in many areas, a state or a locality with a strict firearms control law, the law has been circumvented by criminals or emotionally disturbed youth who send a mail order into a mail order house in California and have a gun surreptitiously delivered to them, or they will travel to a neighboring state where there are lax laws and purchase weapons over the counter. What we have been attempting to do in our legislation, that is the Dodd legislation, is prevent people who would not legally be able to possess a gun in their own community from acquiring a gun through surreptitious means.
Well, now, how easy is it to get a gun or a firearm in the United States today?
At present, it's as easy as buying a bag of jelly beans. Any child can send in a coupon and $6.50, $5.50, as low as $3.50, and purchase a cheap foreign-made weapon. The gun is delivered to him, many times in an unmarked package, many times, in most cases, unknown to his parents or any legal authorities in the community.
Well, now,
a great number of criminals who are unable to purchase weapons in their own community because of strict local laws will use the mail order route to purchase a variety of weapons ranging from .22 caliber revolvers to massive weapons of war such as anti-tank guns, bazookas, mortars, and what have you.
You mean a person can get a mortar or an anti-tank gun through the mail in this country?
Yes,
is this what you just said?
We have in our office in Washington a Finnish anti-tank gun, 20-millimeter weapon. It's semi-automatic, which makes it legal. And you can purchase the gun and 8 magazines of ammunition, armor-piercing ammunition, through the mail. It will be delivered to you in a crate. No one knows the difference. We have several cases of criminal elements obtaining this weapon. Our most famous case is one in New Jersey, as I've suggested, of three youths who, on a weekend outing, leisurely destroyed several farm buildings and farm equipment and so forth with one of these items.
Well, now, what would they want these things for? Robbery or insurrection or what?
It, again, depends on the individuals. The youths involved in New Jersey were apparently what we call Naziophiles. They had World War II German uniforms on. They were reenacting Nazi orders in the field, firing the weapon, giving commands and orders and so forth. This same weapon, two of them were found in the possession of two criminals that have been called the Dillingers of the 1960s, Wilcoxon and Nussbaum, two infamous bank robbers who in their arsenal had two of these anti-tank guns and a large quantity of ammunition.
Well, now, what about the hunter? Now, I have been known to go out in the field myself, and I don't own a rifle, but I have borrowed them at times. And if I wanted to go hunting, would Senator Dodd's, is it an amendment or a law? I'm confused on that.
It's an amendment to the Federal Firearms Act.
I see. Well, this amendment, would it bar me from owning a rifle for hunting or for sport?
The only the major controls that it would put over rifles would include, one, it would prevent the sale of a rifle to a person under 18, and two, the bill would actually bar all mail-order sales of weapons, which would include rifles and shotguns. That is mail order sales of weapons to individuals. However, if you wanted to purchase a mail order rifle or shotgun, if you happen to have a catalog from a house in Chicago, for example, you could very easily go to your federally licensed dealer in in the city of Detroit and have the weapon shipped to that dealer, and he in turn could transfer it to you.
Our guest tonight, Mr. Carl Perrien. Our topic, should we control the sale of guns? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people, and we continue our week-long look at crime here on Night Call. Tonight's topic, should we control the sale of guns? Our guest, Mr. Carl Perrien, and he is the staff director of the U.S. Senate Juvenile Delinquency Committee, and a gentleman who knows a great deal about guns and the role that guns play in crime here in America. Now, if you'd like to make a comment on tonight's topic, should we control the sale of guns, or ask a question of Mr. Perrien, call us here at Night Call, our national number. Area code 313-846-6601. The lines are now open. The operators are on duty. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. We invite you to join us here at Night Call. And Mr. Perrien, I have a caller now from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, a lady, Miss Norma Harper. Hello, Norma. Speak right up, ma'am. You're on Night Call.
Yes. I would like to ask a question in regard to the sale of firearms through the mail, which doesn't seem to have as good a control as it should have. And one example, if I may, is the it's quite possible that we know that the late President Kennedy may have been alive today if that mail order gun had not been sold. Now, my question is, what is being done to curtail this method of buying of arms throughout the country, and what can be done to help it even further from the average individual, especially through the means of mail?
Carl?
Yes, Russ. Well, this will take a minute to answer.
Well, you go ahead. Take all the time you want, sir.
This committee has been involved in the investigation of the sale of mail-order weapons for some 4.5 years, about three and a half years before President Kennedy was assassinated. Now, the name mail-order sale is a misnomer. Actually, the guns are ordered by mail, but because of postal regulations, they cannot be delivered through the mail. They have to be delivered by a common carrier such as Railway Express, Greyhound, or what have you. We found as early as 1961 that a new element was getting into the mail order business, and this was brought about by several factors. One was a tremendous influx of cheap foreign-made weapons and foreign surplus military weapons. A group of shady dealers got into the mail order business and were selling these weapons for very low prices. They were advertising in so-called girly books, occasionally in the types of books that appeal to youngsters, or in magazines that appeal to what we would normally refer to as thrill-seeking type personalities and so forth. We subpoenaed the files of several Railway Express companies For example, in the city of Washington, and we found that 25% of the mail order deliveries in that city were to persons with criminal records, and that in our high crime precincts, upwards of 80% of the guns delivered or ordered by persons in certain precincts had criminal records in that city. We checked other cities such as Chicago, Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, and so forth, and found that this percentage held true, generally that 25 to 30% of the mail order purchasers had criminal records and would not be able to purchase weapons in their communities. As a result of these initial investigations, Senator Dodd introduced a bill months prior to the assassination of President Kennedy that would put a good deal of control over this business, that is the mail order common carrier method of purchasing and delivering weapons.
Norma, does that answer your question?
At that point, we had the support of the National Rifle Association and other hunting groups. Subsequent to the assassination of President Kennedy, we included in our bill the so-called long guns, such as rifles and shotguns, and it was at that point that the hunters of the United States rose against us, and we have been countered by the gun lobbies ever since in our efforts to control this particular traffic in weapons.
I'm not sure. Did Norma leave the line? Norma, are you still there? Well, I think she did. I'm sorry. Thank you very much for calling Night Call, Norma. We appreciate your call. Lady from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. Let's go again to Denver, Carl, and we have a listener on KTLN. Another lady tonight, Miss Margaret Sellinger. Hello, Margaret. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
Oh, hello, Miss Gibbs.
Hello, and how are you? Your comment.
Tonight, but I was too late.
Okay.
But the lady who called next to the last said very much what I had on my mind also.
Mm-hmm.
Because it had seemed to me that this so-called ex-policeman sounded more like something coming out of the Daily Worker.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is your question for Mr. Perrion tonight?
Well, I listened to the lady just ahead of me, and she seemed to feel that President Kennedy might not have been shot had Mr. Oswald not had access to a mail-order gun. Well, this I disagree with, because the Sullivan Law has certainly not kept guns out of the hands of the criminals in New York, and I believe we would have bootlegging of guns in this country as well if the law-abiding citizen would be following the law and not buying guns, that the criminal would not feel restricted in any manner. I think instead it would be much better to strengthen the laws concerning the criminal who goes out with a gun to rob, and making it a much more severe penalty, and go at the end where the trouble is. And many of us fear that this Dodd bill is merely a prelude to complete disarmament of our country. I didn't catch the speaker's name tonight.
It's Mr. Carl Perrion. He's the staff director of the U.S. Senate Juvenile Delinquency Committee.
I still didn't get the name.
Perrion.
How do you spell it?
P-E-R-I-A-N.
Oh, I see. Yes. Well, I'm sure Mr. Perrion is familiar with State Department Bill 7277, which deals with the complete disarmament of the nation and putting us under a U.N. peace force. And Public Law 87297, which put that into law. And I am fearful, and I believe many others are, that this Dodd bill is a prelude to registering all guns and eventually coming around, taking them, and leaving us completely at the mercy of the U.N.
Mr. Perrion, would you like to comment on that?
Well, I'm afraid this young lady has been subjected to about four of the propaganda principles of those lobby groups that have been fighting any reasonable control over legislation. And let's take her points one by one. First of all, it is completely untrue that the Sullivan Law does not work. The Sullivan Law does work. The city of New York has the lowest homicide rate by gun of any city in the United States. The homicide rate by gun in the city of New York is something like 4.3% per 100,000. in the city of Dallas, where there are no gun laws whatsoever, the homicide rate by gun is something like 14 per 100,000. It's been proven time and again in studies throughout the country, and the FBI reports that in areas where there is strict gun control, there are strict gun control laws, that your homicide rate by gun, your aggravated assault rate, where gun is involved, and your crimes involving weapons are considerably reduced. So there's no basis, in fact, to the argument that the Sullivan Law does not work. It does work. Two, this is not a bill which is attempting to disarm the law-abiding citizen. There is nothing in this bill that will prevent a law-abiding citizen, as I've said, from buying, owning, using, possessing, you name it, hunting with any type of weapon. What this bill will do, and what it's designed to do, is prevent guns from falling into the hands of criminals, juveniles, and emotionally disturbed people, or drug addicts, or what have you. I can't recall several of the other points that were made, but...
It's something about that this is a... that it would leave us at the mercy of the U.N.
This bill has nothing to do with any other federal legislation. This is strictly relating to the Federal Firearms Act. There are only two acts that control the owning and maintenance of weapons by United States citizens, and they are the National Firearms Act and the Federal Firearms Act. They have nothing to do with giving the United Nations the ability or the authority to disarm any citizen in this country.
Margaret,
I'm familiar with State Department's Bill 7277, aren't you?
No, I am not, but there are only two federal laws controlling the ownership, sale, and or possession and use of weapons in this country, and they are the Federal Firearms Act and the National Firearms Act.
Well, this 7277 is the United States Program for General and Complete Disarmament in a Peaceful World. I have it before me.
Well, now, are they talking about, Margaret, disarming armies?
No. Disarming the entire populace.
In the world?
In the world.
I see. So it's not only directed at Americans.
Who introduced these bills?
Well, now, that came out of the State Department. But the public law that enacted it into law is Public Law 87297, and it was House Bill 9118 of the 87th Congress. It was passed into law September the 26th, 1961.
Well, now, who introduced it, though, Margaret?
Now, that I don't know. I don't recall that.
Well, I think maybe that would be a topic for another night to really go into.
I think there's some confusion here. As I've said, there are only two federal laws that relate to the ownership and possession of weapons. And the ones that I have just discussed are the only two laws on the books. And
if I may, I'd like to read Section 3 of
Margaret, I have a policy that I prefer you would tell me about it. I find that when people start reading things, they go on and on and on. Now,
no,
if you can...
This is just a couple of sentences.
Well, I would prefer you tell me about it, Margaret.
Well, it says that the manufacture of armaments is going to be prohibited except for those agreed types and quantities to be used by the UN Peace Force and those required to maintain internal order. And before that, in Section A... It had said that that would be only the police force to maintain internal peace.
I see.
To quiet disorders within the community.
Right. Margaret, I want to thank you for your comments. They've been most interesting. Miss Margaret Sellinger from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. Our guest tonight is Mr. Carl Perrien, who is the staff director of the U.S. Senate Juvenile Delinquency Committee. Mr. Perrien is an expert on the topic of guns and the role that they play here in crime in America. Our topic tonight, should we control the sale of guns? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be.
Proceeding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host Russ Gibb.
Should we control the sale of guns? That's our topic on Night Call tonight as we continue our week-long look at crime. Our guest, Mr. Carl Perrien, who is the staff director of the U.S. Senate Juvenile Delinquency Committee. And, Carl, we have a caller from Butte, Montana, a listener on KBOW, Mr. Charles Nolan. I see that we have a disconnect there, so let's go to Salt Lake City, Utah, a listener on KSL, Evelyn Mersch. Hello, Evelyn. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
All right. Is this Mr. Perrien?
That's correct.
Well, my husband belongs to the NRA, and he received this April 13th letter, which I think Senator Dodd has attacked. I would like to know exactly what was a misstatement in that letter.
Well, the executive director of the National Rifle Association, who has worked very closely with this committee over the last 4 years on gun legislation, admitted in public testimony before this committee that there are errors in the letter, or at least one major error, and that is the license fees are relating to ammunition, and that there are exaggerations in terms of the ability of a hunter, for example, to carry weapons across state lines. I don't want to misrepresent him. He may not have admitted that there were exaggerations, but there was some a great deal of discussion over the implications in that letter, and from the mountain of mail received by the Senate and the House, one can only conclude that the hunters of the United States interpreted that letter to mean that if this bill were passed, they would not be able to carry rifles or shotguns across state lines. Or that they would only be able to do so under a tremendous amount of red tape, which would be wrapped around them by federal officials. None of this was true. It was admitted in public hearings that there were, that there was at least one error and perhaps other misstatements. The senator asked the NRA if they would send out another letter correcting any errors or exaggerations, and we were told that that would be given consideration, but apparently they have decided not to correct any misstatements or misleading information contained in that initial letter.
Evelyn, did you receive any other letters on the topic?
No, we never have.
What do you feel about this law, Evelyn? I mean, after reading the letter and hearing Mr. Perrien's comments.
Well, I certainly feel that it was a misleading letter. It caused my husband and his friends to write letters against the Dodd bill. And yet now, from what we have learned, the Dodd bill would not do the things that the letter led us to believe it would.
That's absolutely right. We've received letters from many gun clubs and hunters groups and so forth who said that their original response was to shoot off or fire off a letter to their senator or congressman declaiming the bill, denouncing it and so forth. But once they got a copy of the bill and read it, it was entirely different from what they had what they had considered based on the information in the NRA letter, and we received subsequent letters from these people and from these groups saying that they were no longer opposed to the bill because they now had read it and that they had been somewhat misled or somewhat misinformed.
Evelyn, I want to thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
It's been nice talking to you. Evelyn Mersch from Salt Lake City, Utah. And, Carl, let me understand once again, and for the benefit of those people that have just joined us here at Night Call, the Dodd legislation will still allow hunters to have firearms and use them. Is that correct?
It will allow them to... It will put no restrictions on their purchase, on the ability to possess or to use or to carry in interstate commerce or to take across state lines for hunting.
Now, if somebody wanted...
It will only prevent the sale of a weapon of this type to a person under 18. However, a person under 18 can still buy a rifle or a shotgun with the knowledge and consent or through their parents. So it really will not prevent the young rural youth of 16 from owning or using a firearm or a rifle or a shotgun.
We have another caller in Denver, listener on KTLN, Mr. Stephen Smith.
Well, good evening, sir.
Hello, sir. Your comment.
This sounds like a put-up job with all the calls from Denver, but I'm working quite late and was listening to the program.
You've got such beautiful country out there that I think you probably have a lot of hunters out there, too.
Very much so, sir. And I might preface a little comment I'd make to let you know that I'm a family man, three children. I've been very active in youth welfare and the Junior Chamber of Commerce. And, I belong to none of these organizations and have no access to grind whatsoever. With just one or two comments that might be appropriate, Mr. Perrion quoted some statistics on homicides in New York and Dallas. Might be interesting. He spoke in terms of homicide by firearms. Anyone realize there are other ways to commit the same. It'd be rather interesting, maybe too lengthy, to find out if it had a direct bearing in total number of homicides. But one thing I wanted to bring out is it seems like every time they come up with some problem in this country, locally or nationally, they always try to legislate. And personally, I just can't see how, as has been proved in the past, legislation will correct a big fault. Now, I heartily agree with the gentleman, very strongly agree with him, that these obvious loopholes that he's spoken of, something should be done. I also remind the gentleman, however, that two things. One, I don't know how many millions of firearms are in existence right now, but I would remind him of the longevity of most firearms is a factor that's going to prevent complete legislating out. Second, is the fact, I believe the lady earlier spoke, where that's the case, they probably would develop quite a passing or a trading or a black market in firearms. So these are just some general observations that he might like to comment on.
Carl, would you care to comment on any of those?
Well, I can only, again, refer to the figures on homicides. There is no question that no matter... If you take the range of weapons available for use in assault, for example, the gun is seven times more deadly than all other weapons combined.
Is that in the United States?
If you're assaulted with a knife or a club or a rock or a brick, as compared to a gun, your chances are seven times greater of ending up dead if a gun is involved than if any other weapon is involved. We know that in areas of the country where there are strict firearms legislation, that the homicide rate is much lower. There's no doubt that what the gentleman says is correct. There are many other factors involved in motivating and causing criminal behavior. But the mere fact of the existence of a weapon many times not only will create the motivation, but will consummate the acting out of aggression or what have you in a dead person results.
Stephen, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Well, thank you for your courtesy.
I've enjoyed your comments. Mr. Stephen Smith from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. And another listener on KTLN. This is Colorado Night on Night Call. Miss Norma Harmon. Hello, Norma. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
I would like to say this. I have always felt that if I perhaps did keep a weapon in my home, that in a fit of anger, I perhaps would use it, you know, marriageably speaking. So I thought, you know, that it's best not happen if I didn't have one. Now I would like to ask Mr. Perry this. I have assumed that perhaps if there were a robber to enter my...
Pardon me, Russ, I can't hear too well.
I see. I'll try and paraphrase it.
All right.
Norma, can you speak up a little bit, please?
That if there were a robber to enter my home, and if he found that I had a gun for protection, I would like to think that he might perhaps be merciful if he did not find one, because he would know that my intentions were to shoot him if he came in, and perhaps he wouldn't shoot me if he didn't find one. I mean, is that so?
Carl, did you hear the comment?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't.
She wants to know whether or not you feel that if she did not own a gun and a robber came to her home and broke in, and she wasn't waving a gun at him, that he might be merciful to her, that the chances of her surviving the robbery without being killed in the process are greater if you don't have a gun to protect yourself. What do you think about that?
That's a difficult question to answer. The only information we have is the testimony of experienced law enforcement officers.
And what is that, Carl?
Subject. They feel that it is better if a robbery victim does not have a gun for personal protection or does not attempt to shoot it out, as it were, with a robber. A person who is going to rob, usually wants to rob, he will take the money and leave the victim alone. If the victim attempts to engage in a gun battle or what have you, the robber many times is committed and is usually more adept, more competent, and what might have been an ordinary robbery turns out to be a robbery, a homicide.
Norma, thank you for your question. I hope we've answered it here on Night Call.
Thank you.
Good night, ma'am. Norma Harmon from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLM. I think we have time to go out to Baltimore, Maryland now, a listener on WBAL, Miss Irene Calhoun. Hello, Irene. Speak right up, ma'am. You're on Night Call. Hello, Irene. Irene? I'm sorry, you have to speak up a little bit, Irene. I'm having difficulty hearing you.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes.
You're on Night Call.
Thank you. I was listening to the radio program when I came home tonight, and I was quite shocked when I was reading the newspapers and magazines about the sale of guns and potential criminals. It isn't, I've read that the gun bill, 7727. 7297. There isn't anything you can do about the sale of guns.
Carl, do you think there's...
If someone wants to buy a gun, they will either buy a gun or create a gun. It isn't necessarily the gun who kills people. It's people that kill people. Now you can walk into your corner drugstore and buy a magazine that tells you how to kill people. You read it in the newspaper every day. How to kill people.
Irene?
Yes?
I want to thank you for your comments. It's time for us to break our station. And I want to thank you very, very much. It was very interesting. Miss Irene Calhoun from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL.
Our guest tonight is Mr. Carl Perrien. Our topic should be control the sale of guns. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America. Busy America. Busy making money. Busy buying gadgets. Busy keeping up with the you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
Where do you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. Our topic on Night Call, should we control the sale of guns? Our expert tonight is Mr. Carl Perrien, who is staff director of the U.S. Senate Juvenile Delinquency Committee. And if you'd like to ask Mr. Perrien a question on firearms or make a comment on the topic, should we control the sale of guns, give us a call here at our national Night Call number. Now, you may dial us direct. The number is 313-846-6601. Now, if you wish, you may make the call collect. The number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. Carl, just before we had to break for the station break here, a lady from Baltimore had made a rather interesting comment, Irene Calhoun, and her comment was that people kill people. Would you care to comment on that?
Well, the usual argument, and this is another slogan of the those persons that are opposed to any type of control, sensible controls over the acquisition or ownership of firearms. The way the statement goes is guns don't kill people, people kill people, that if they didn't use guns, they would use knives, or look how many automobiles kill people. And Senator Dodd has a good answer, I think, and that is, did you ever try to cut a loaf of bread with a pistol? The point is, an automobile has a function and a use in our society, as does a knife. But the only function of a gun is to put a bullet through something, whether it's a target or an animal or another human being. And when you have a vast proliferation, that is millions of guns floating around, available to any emotionally disturbed person, any drug addict, any criminal, anybody in a temporary state of emotional disturbance, coupled with the fact that a gun is seven times more deadly than any of these other instruments, which have more legitimate uses, you're bound to have more crime, more deaths, and what have you.
Carl, I have a caller out in New York City now, and her name is Marcia Golden, and she's listening on WBAL. Marcia, speak right up, ma'am. You're on Night Call.
Well, very good. I'd like to ask a question about guns.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, after listening to all this, now here in New York we have the Sullivan Law, and as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't work. And I'm just wondering why pass more laws that are going to harass law-abiding citizens.
Carl, there it is.
Well, apparently you didn't hear the beginning of the program, because this, as I said, is another piece of propaganda promulgated by the anti- gun legislation groups, that the Sullivan Law doesn't work. The Sullivan Law does work. It has cut down the availability and the number of weapons in the city of New York. It has kept New York a city that should have, because of social, economic, and geographic conditions, one of the highest murder rates in the country. It has the lowest murder rate by gun of any city in the United States. And when you compare New York City with other major cities such as Detroit, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles, it has a much a lower homicide rate by gun. And when you compare it with cities that have no gun controls at all, as I've said before, such as Dallas, Phoenix, Miami, and what have you, you'll find that the homicide rate by gun in these cities with no gun laws is 4 to 5 times greater than the homicide rate by gun in the city of New York. Actually, with 8 million people in the city, New York does very well, and the Sullivan Law is one of the reasons.
Well, it certainly doesn't seem so when I open my...
Well, it doesn't seem so when you read the newspaper, because you're looking at a small geographic area with 8 million people. But you take it down to a city of 500,000 people, and you have 92 murders and 67 of them committed by gun. An elementary knowledge of statistics dictates that there's comparatively a runaway gun problem in terms of homicide in the smaller city. The major problem in New York is the fact that you have so many people in such a confined area. You have a limited number of newspapers, and with statistically fewer by rate murders, it appears to be more simply because of the larger number of people.
Well, how will this law you seem to want to pass help me feel safer in my home?
How will it help you feel safer in your home?
Yeah.
Well, one of the major ways that the Sullivan Law is circumvented is the fact that criminals in your city have sent to California for weapons and had them delivered into New York City in circumvention of the Sullivan Law, and they have been used to commit murder, robbery, and assault in the city of New York. Now, this law will prevent the mail order sale of weapons into your city. It will further prevent criminals, and we have documented evidence from police officers from New Jersey and New York City and the state of Maryland of New York criminals going into New Jersey or into the state of Maryland, particularly into the state of Maryland, buying large quantities of cheap weapons because they don't have to identify themselves there. They can't buy them in New York City because of the Sullivan Law. They drive into the nearest county that they can in Maryland, buy large quantities of pistols and other concealable handguns, drive back to New York, and sell them to other criminals. That's how this law will make you feel safer in New York City.
Marcia, I have other callers. I want to thank you for your comments and your questions. Good night, ma'am.
Good night.
Marcia Golden from New York City, a listener on WBAL. And let's go out to Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL, Mr. Bill O'Brien. Hello, Bill. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
First of all, Mr. Burian, I want to say that you made a comment that when these different amendments were adapted to the bill, that you lost all the hunters. You didn't. I've been a hunter for several years, and I've been all for these controls. And I think several other hunters are also.
Well, let me correct my statement. When I walked into my office and waded through 5 feet of mail, it seemed like I had lost all the hunters. and 98% of the letters were against me, so it just appeared that way. I will retract my statement. You're correct. A great many hunters and sportsmen have supported and do support this particular amendment.
Well, I guess most of us just don't write letters.
Bill, you scored a bullseye on that one.
Another point is on the Sullivan Law. These people say how it's not effective. It doesn't prevent, crimes of violence in New York. The main point of the law is that it gives the policeman a perfect chance to arrest a man and convict him after he's been convicted of a crime for possession of a gun. And the main thing is that they can get these people out of circulation. It isn't primarily to prevent the sale or possession of firearms. It's to make it very easy to get a convicted felon out of circulation. And most people don't think of this.
Carl?
I agree.
Well, Bill, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Right.
I've enjoyed your comments. Thank you, sir. Mr.
Bill.
Yes, sir. Mr. Bill O'Brien from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. Now, let's go out west again. A listener on KGHL in Billings, Montana, Elaine Doll. Hello, Elaine. Speak right up. You're on night call. Hello, ma'am. You're on night call. Well, we're having some difficulty with our line here. Hello, Elaine? I guess that she's not there right now. I'm sorry we've lost that connection. Carl?
Yes, Roger.
Let's go over here in a few minutes what we've said about this bill. Now, I have in front of me a piece of literature that's put out by a rather respectable sportsman group here in the United States. And frankly, after reading it, I have the feeling that they're saying that Senator Dodd is part of a communist conspiracy which would disarm and seize our country. What do you think about this?
Well, as I've said many times before, of all the charges made against the committee, this is without a doubt the most absurd charge that could be leveled. As most people who even occasionally read the newspapers know, Senator Dodd is one of the most active senators in the Congress, fighting daily against the communist activities, both in this country and abroad. He is recognized as a leader in the anti-communist drive, and to accuse him of being involved even as unintentionally in some communist plot to disarm the country is, as I've said, the height of absurdity. He doesn't want to disarm anybody. He owns approximately a dozen weapons himself. He likes to hunt. He's taught his sons to hunt. His feeling is that he's a law-abiding citizen, and as a law-abiding citizen, he has the right to own, possess, and use a firearm, as does every other law-abiding citizen. His only intention is to take firearms and weapons, destructive weapons, out of the hands of people who are not legally entitled to own them in their own communities. Now, this is all he can do as a member of the United States Congress. We only have, we can only function on the basis of our, of interstate commerce. We're just simply trying to allow the states and the local communities to enforce their own laws. In other words, if this law were passed and your community had no gun laws, it wouldn't affect your community.
How many sportsmen are there in the United States? We've been talking as though everybody's a sportsman, and yet I know...
Well, we understand that there are an average of 20 million hunting licenses issued annually.
Out of a population of what, about 100?
192 million.
192 million. So actually this is a minority problem in one sense.
That's correct. And as you heard the gentleman refer before, even many of the hunters are on our side, so it doesn't even represent all of the hunters and sportsmen. What it has amounted to is a very powerful, vociferous minority that with a half a dozen or so charges and misconceptions and false assumptions has led the country down the primrose path during the last 34 years and prevented any sane control over the distribution of deadly weapons.
Carl, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
It's been my pleasure, Rush.
Mr. Carl Perrien, who is the staff director of the U.S. Senate Juvenile Delinquency Committee. Our topic, should we control the sale of guns? Tomorrow night, we continue our look at crime on Night Call. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.